Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. An armed mob has been let loose in the Florida Everglades to tackle an infestation of Burmese pythons that's eating their way through a fragile ecosystem. We hit the road to South Florida to check out the state's python challenge that's attracting worldwide attention. All that and more is coming up, but first, these Florida headlines.
From Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter. An appellate court says every defendant convicted of a crime must now pay a $20 fee to support Crime Stoppers programs. The full First District Court of Appeal unanimously withdrew a prior decision by a three-judge panel of the same court that said the assessment applied only to defendants who are fined. The new ruling notes that the law requiring the fee was revised in 2010 to change language that made the fee a surcharge to any fine imposed. The 14 participating judges wrote that the cost is no longer an additional surcharge. The Florida Supreme Court has upheld a law requiring state employees to contribute 3% of their salaries toward their retirement plans. Senate President Don Gates says the ruling is good news for the state.
I believe that the changes that the legislature made to the pension system make it more likely that our pension system will be solvent.
The Florida Education Association, which tried to get the law struck down, says Gates's argument is bogus. The union claims the state's retirement system is healthier than most in the country. The ruling also means the government won't have to pay back the 3% it's been collecting from employees since the law took effect in 2011, something lawmakers had said would mean a big budget gap to fill. Florida Governor Rick Scott is proposing three changes he'd like to see in laws governing how the state runs its elections. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the changes reverse some of the election law reforms that Scott signed into law 2 years ago.
Scott's office released a statement saying the proposed changes are meant to restore Floridians' confidence in our election system. First, he wants the number of early voting days to remain at a minimum of 8, and then he'd let local supervisors decide if they want up to 14. He also wants more and larger early voting locations as they see the need. And finally, he wants a shorter ballot with shorter summaries of proposed amendments. The proposals come after legislative committees heard from election supervisors this week about what went wrong in their counties. Those committees continue hearing testimony and have not yet crafted election reform bills. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
This is Florida Public Radio. An illegal immigrant seeking a Florida law license has received a federal deportation deferral and work permit. Jose Godinez-Samperio has also notified the Florida Supreme Court that he has received a Florida driver's license. The High Court is considering whether to admit him to the Florida bar after hearing oral argument in October. Some justices then had suggested holding off on a decision until the federal government acted on his application for the deferral and work permit. President Barack Obama announced the deferral policy for young illegal immigrants in June. Godinez-Samperio came to the United States on a visitor's visa when he was 9 years old, but his family never returned to Mexico. He has a Florida State University law degree and has also passed the bar exam. And with the start of the legislative session growing nearer, Florida lawmakers are rolling up their sleeves. That includes taking a closer look at the impact of pending congressional budget cuts. Regan McCarthy has more.
A Senate panel heard budget requests from a number of agencies Wednesday, including the Department of Military Affairs. Colonel Glenn Sutphin says the department's bracing for potential federal cuts associated with what's called sequestration.
If sequestration actually happens, there will be a 10% cut. At that point, sir, there is a lot of cuts for Florida. And even though we're the Department of Military Affairs and theoretically just the Guard, we function as your military advisors also. We're extremely concerned about bases across Florida.
Sutphin estimates as many as 30,000 jobs could be affected. He also asked the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation, Tourism, and Economic Development for money to refurbish the state's National Guard armories and update their IT equipment. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Florida Public Radio.
Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes. Throughout this month, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission is allowing residents to take part in what some call an environmental hunt of Burmese pythons in the Everglades. I made my way to the Everglades to see why this hunt has attracted worldwide attention and as many as 800 wannabe python hunters. To help break things down, I spoke with an Everglades legend, Alligator Ron Bergeron, who's also a Florida Fish and Wildlife Commissioner. I caught up with Alligator Ron at the Everglades Coalition Conference at the Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables.
Well, obviously, the python is an invasive species, and over time, irresponsible people have turned them loose in the wild, and they multiply very, very rapidly, and it's actually they're eating a lot of our native wildlife, and so it's important. This hunt is really, I would classify it as an environmental hunt, to hunt an invasive species that's harming our environment and our food chain, our natural food chain. So it's I really think that the state of Florida and our governor has pushed forward this tournament and challenge. And what's so nice about it is now we have the public helping us protect our environment and removing an invasive species. So I think it's extremely important.
Now, you hunt in a different way. You say you're not going to be shooting them or decapitating them. You're going to handle these by hand.
Well, I'm a native of Florida. My family's been here for eight generations, 170 years. So we were raised in the Florida Everglades as the Gladesman's culture. So we're very knowledgeable about handling snakes, catching alligators alive. And these are old traditional cultures of Florida that I was raised in. So our technique, I wouldn't recommend this to the average person. You know, these snakes are dangerous, and most people will end up shooting them. And that's the way the general public should address this, to be very safe. I would definitely not recommend the average person catching a python alive. My technique is that once I see the snake, and normally they run from you, is to catch up with them, grab them by the tail, pull them back, let them go forward, let them think they're getting away, and when they lift their head up, you have to get them right behind their head to where they can't come around and bite you. So you got to be very careful. But I want to make it clear that the average person, this isn't something that the public should be doing.
Now, even though Alligator Ron doesn't recommend handling a live python by hand, most of the several hundred amateur hunters got to witness some manhandling during a demonstration at FWC's 2013 Python Challenge kickoff event in Davie the following day. Here's Captain Jeff Fobb with Venom One giving the demonstration.
People who take it upon themselves to capture these animals that really put themselves at risk of injury because they're doing something that the snake is going to perceive negatively. And the snake's going to defend itself. And how do they defend themselves? Biting, coiling. They try to get away. As soon as I let her out of the bag, she's not going to try and attack me, probably. She's going to try and get away. Because if you're an animal that doesn't have a whole lot of weapons, your best defense is being as far away from a potential predator as possible.
Right? She likes that green shirt.
But here she's surrounded by people, so, and you'll see that she's a little bit cool this morning. But this animal's about 13 feet. And she perceives me tailing her as a negative thing, so she's going to come over and look. But if you look, what's she doing? She's not attacking me, right?
Not yet.
She's keeping her distance.
Now, watching that 13-foot python didn't scare these folks away, so what's all the craze about? Why did so many people descend on South Florida just for hunting pythons? Well, I heard several reasons. For some, it was a chance to try out their brand-new gun they've purchased in light of all the debates surrounding gun control. And for others, it was just something fun and unusual to do. As it turns out, there's also a market for python skin, and those in the market say this is a great way to help the Everglades with its infestation problem. Here's Brian Wood, the owner of All American Gator Products, Inc. He's standing just alongside the python demonstration with a display of bags, wallets, and even pants made out of pythons.
Yes, well, you know, we've been manufacturing the alligator products for many years, so now we're just going to do the pythons because they're exotic and they're high fashion. And if you look at Gucci,
are they high fashion?
Oh, absolutely. You look at a Gucci, a Prada, or Hermes, and you're talking about $4,000 to $5,000. Where, you know, we can do it for $2,100, and we're not Gucci, but it's still same manufacturing process, and it's still the same skin, and it's a person producing it.
What swanky name can you put up there other than Gucci?
What do you mean, like,
for
me?
Well,
Christopher James is my design name, which is my middle name.
Is the demand up for python bags?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Alligator, python, the iguana, and the ostrich, very popular items. The alligator is the diamond of leather. The snake is like the ruby of leather. So the value is not as great in python, but it still has a very, very good value. It runs about $80 per square foot once it's tanned in the leather, where alligator's worth about $120 per square foot when it's turned into leather.
So when they catch all these pythons you're seeing, how do you get your hands on the skin?
Well, they'll be bringing me the whole pythons, and then we'll skin them. And then once we skin them, I have a tannery that tans them in the leather. Then we get the leather back, and I have a store in downtown Hollywood where we manufacture the products there in-house.
Who brings them to you? Like, are you requesting?
The hunters.
Really?
Yeah.
And you pay them?
Pay them $50 to $150 per snake, depending on the size of the snake.
How much do you expect to get with this?
It's hard to say. You know, this year there were only 13 hunters, and I got about 40, 50 snakes. But now you got 700 hunters, so I'm curious to see how many I get. I really don't know. Got a lot more hunters than what we used to have.
Among the hundreds of amateur python hunters gearing up for a big catch is 21-year-old Lauren Stitch of Plantation. That's just one town over from Davie.
I haven't hunted pythons before. I've hunted deer, hog, small animals, but never any reptiles. So this is kind of a first for me, but I'm pretty excited.
Have you done any type of training for this?
They had an online training. I talked to some people who have done stuff like this before, and pretty much I'm just kind of relying on the skills that I have and what I've learned at events like these to try and figure out how I'm going to do this. So,
do you feel equipped with that online training to go out there and tackle a python?
The training was more aimed towards recognizing Florida snakes as compared to the invasive species. I feel like hunting for pythons is basically just walking around until you find one. So there's not a lot of skill involved as far as, like, with a deer, like, you can't call it into you. Like, you have to go out and find the pythons yourself. So they don't have any snake calls, which would be kind of cool. So I feel like the training was useful because that's really all you need to know is just what you're looking for.
And what will happen once you find one?
Hopefully I'll be able to catch it. That's the second hurdle that you have to jump to get to actually completing this, and then humanely euthanize it in order to remove it from the Everglades. So,
how will you do that? How do you plan to humanely euthanize it?
It's going to depend. When I get out there, I'll probably figure it out. The two methods that I've heard that are the safest and the best for the snake in terms of so they don't feel much pain is either destroying the brain by a gunshot or decapitation. So I guess it'll depend how close I want to get to the snake when I actually see one. So,
are you equipped to do either, all three of the options to kill this python? What equipment do you have?
I have a .22 rifle that I'll be bringing with me, as well as a well-sharpened machete in case I need to do that. And I also have a snake hook for handling the snake. So I think I'm pretty prepared, but we'll see. And no one's going to know until they get out there and try it. So,
you're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes. Now, they say the only way to know is to get out there and give it a try. Lauren Stitch was kind enough to allow me to tag along on her first ever python hunt. More on that coming up.
I guess we'll just walk out this way. saw a couple people earlier. So.
And the hunt begins. I meet up with Lauren Stitch on US 27 just past the Sawgrass Recreation Park.
There's this little path thing goes all the way down, so you can stay up on the path and not get too dirty.
What's the point of that? I came all the way here for this, so. And which part of the Everglades are we in?
This is Water Management Area 2. I think it's B. It's all subdivided, so I'm not quite sure.
So this isn't something typical of what someone your age, like your description, would just like, you know, blow many people's minds. So what got you interested in all this?
I think it's the fact that I grew up down here and I was so exposed to the Everglades. I think one thing Florida does really well in its education is to really give, like, even young kids a good appreciation for nature. So I think that's one of the main things that kind of draws me to this kind of activity.
Do you have siblings and all that stuff? Does your family do stuff like this?
We do a lot of fishing and lobstering. I don't think anyone's ever hunted snakes, though, so I may be the first one.
Trendsetter. How many in your family?
I have a brother and a sister, and then my parents.
Older or younger?
Younger. I think snakes, they are shiny, so obviously any, you know, shiny material. There's not a lot of shiny stuff out in the Everglades. A lot of times you can see depressions where they come out of the water and enter the water. Other than that, I guess just a big snake.
Yeah. And we walked, and walked, and a couple of times we thought we spotted something. We heard splashes in the water from other wildlife, and we noticed depressions in vegetation that looked like giant snakes. But we kept on exploring. Lauren eventually started expressing concerns about other enthusiasts who may not be as prepared as she is for the Python Challenge.
I am a little bit worried about this competition in the aspect of they didn't really prepare anybody for it. And I've done a lot of hunting before. I've done a lot of, you know, outdoor activities, land navigation, stuff like that. But there are a lot of people that haven't done that and don't have those skills. And I think the most dangerous thing is there's a lot of snakes out here that are poisonous. And if you don't know the difference, then you could be setting yourself up for a visit to the emergency room at the least, so.
And even the vegetation, the poison.
That's not as much of a big deal, though. You know, it's... You can kind of, that goes away, but a lot of the snakes out here are really poisonous. And if you're stuck out here and you don't have the way to get back quickly, then you could be in a lot of trouble. Hopefully they won't have any bad accidents, though.
Yeah.
That could definitely ruin the hunt for the next year. Too many people. In a way, I think that they had a like kind of a limit on people who could get permits, mm-hmm. and you had to prove that you had experience. I think that may have been a good thing, but the problem was there was no real good way to find that experience. If they would set up like a program that would let people kind of, you know, be educated and learn these kind of skills, then they could do that and still be able to have a larger population that would hunt pythons. Because I'm not sure if having every Joe Schmo that wants to walk around the Everglades hunt pythons is a good idea. And what, 790 people they said signed up? So both my grandmothers were a little worried about that. They were like, you better wear some like bright colors or something, because last thing you want to do is get shot by someone who thinks that, you know, your hat is brown, it kind of looks like a snake, so.
So after about 2 miles of walking, we came up with nothing. The good thing for Lauren is that she has an entire month to make a catch. As far as the overall health of the Everglades and eradicating other invasive species, the Argentine black and white tegu lizard is causing an even bigger problem for the Glades than pythons. Here's Rodney Irwin, a python hunt permit holder who describes himself as a non-native removal specialist.
Well, right now the python is the bright shiny object in the room that everybody's looking at. Next year we're going to be talking about tegus. Tegu is an Argentine lizard that represents a much bigger problem than the pythons, which isn't to say the pythons aren't a problem, but python eats one animal he might not eat for another 2-3 weeks, month, 2 months. Tegus eat eggs, other animal eggs, and they will go into a nest and wipe out an entire generation at one time instead of one animal at a time like the pythons.
Well, we'll have to look into that. So when do you go out to get a python?
Well,
head out?
Fortunately for me, I live in Homestead. I can leave my house and be in a high target environment in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that are here and will be participating, some of them came from, you know, far, far away for this. And in actuality, yeah, the number of man hours expended searching for pythons, the last data I had was over 100 man hours of searching per python. So that's, keep that in mind when you, you know, look at the take on this. I mean, this has turned out to be huge event. I was not expecting nearly this many people. Last I heard was 400, then I just heard today 600, and I just heard a few minutes ago that it could easily be up to 800 people. Originally I thought this is going to be a handful of guys like me that have the non-native invasive species permit.
And that's it from the Python Challenge. It's off to a slow start. There have only been reports of about a dozen pythons being caught so far. This week, U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar announced his retirement. The resignation is the second in the environmental sector following the departure of Lisa Jackson, administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Salazar, at age 57, spoke at the 28th Annual Everglades Coalition Conference this weekend. Here is a condensed version of his 32-minute address.
Let me all just say to all of you, thank you so much for being the real champions on the ground who have taken the baton for time long before I was a part of this effort and have made the Everglades not only a World Heritage Site, but really the example for the United States of America and for our entire Earth about what it's like to restore an entire ecosystem. Some of you know that at one point in my life, I studied to be a priest. I was going to a seminary in Cincinnati, Ohio, coming from this little place in southern Colorado, where I had a spiritual advisor who has written a book, and it's about St. Francis, and it talks about the journey and the dream. And it's one of my favorite books in life. But I think about what I learned in that book and what I learned from a person by the name of Father Murray Bodo. And I think about the journey and the dream here at the Everglades. You are that journey, and you have been on that journey, and you have this dream for what the Everglades can and will be. And that's a journey and a dream that will obviously continue to unfold in the weeks and months and years ahead in a whole host of things that we all do as one community that so celebrates the Everglades. So, for all of you who have been working on the Everglades, and either by whatever you have done, please stand up. Let me see. Who's been here on this journey? Please stand up if you've been on this journey of the Everglades. Emmy, stand up. Kit, I know you have. Teresa, you have. So I will have the members of Congress who are here, as they are new minted members of Congress, carry on the message to everybody else, and that is that the great things that really have happened over the last 4 years, which really have been monumental in our progress on the Everglades, have happened because there has been a whole host of people who have been harnessed together to make some things happen. And so to our congressmen and women, to Governor Scott, and to Senators Nielsen, and to Senator Rubio, we need to make sure that this journey continue, that the dream that the Everglades Coalition has forged for such a long time, that the momentum that we have created, not only over the last 4 years, but ever since Nat Reed, 28 years ago, came to his first dinner, that that dream is kept alive and that this journey keeps on going. And it won't be easy. I do remember, and you will, no, stay standing. These guys, you will see, for example, that there are some matters which the coalition has talked to me about today that are going to require us to make sure that we are investing in conservation and specifically investing in the Everglades, that we need to have a new WERDA reauthorization that will keep the Everglades going. That we need to have a 2013 and a 2014 budget that says, yes, the Everglades is a conservation priority for the United States of America. That we need to have you, along with Congressman Garcia, and the two senators and the governor saying to the world that are the decision makers, including the President of the United States, the Restore Council, the NERDA trustees, and everybody else, that somehow these nearly $6 billion that we have for the restoration of the Gulf Coast, that a significant amount of that has to come to completing the Tamiami Bridging Project, that we need to make sure that, but as Clarence so well said as he spoke about sustainability, that it's not just about water quantity, but it's also about the quality of the water. And so because the people in this room made sure that a lot of people woke up, including Nat Reed and Ron, who knocked on Governor Scott's doors and said to him, the Everglades is important, don't turn your back on it. And because we have a great leader in Lisa Jackson as administrator of EPA, we now have about a $900 million commitment under the new judicial doctrine that will govern water quality for the Everglades that will bring about the kind of water quality that we can celebrate for the Everglades. Now, that's something we can all be very proud of. Now, let me also say that as I speak about these great efforts that we have been able to work on together, that I recognize that there's a lot more work that needs to be done. Yes, the Tamiami Bridging Project is important. Yes, we need to continue to work with Joellen Darcy and Rock Salt and the Army Corps of Engineers to complete the SEP project and the Central Everglades planning process, which is moving faster than I think any other project in the history of the Corps. We need to move forward and make sure that we have a WERDA bill that Congress does, in fact, push through, because I am hopeful that Patrick and Lois and Joe and Bill and Senator Rubio will be able to show us that this Congress is more than a do-nothing Congress, but that you're able to get significant legislation through, such as a WERDA bill, because it's important that we get some projects that are authorized here. You are the ones that, at the end of the day, will make sure that the Everglades restoration effort is not only something that continues, but something that continues to be an example for conservation and restoration, not only for the United States of America, but really for the entire Earth. And I am confident that you all and we all will get it done. Thank you very much.
Well, we clearly have Rock Salt, who's a genuine Everglades treasure, and we have a rock star in Secretary Salazar. Thank you, Secretary. Thank you very much for all your kind words. And now we are adjourned.
And that's it for our show tonight from the 2013 Python Challenge and the 28th Annual Everglades Coalition Conference. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.